even if mainstream culture or a lot of other people or critics or whatever say you don't belong, there's still a place for you in the military, even if you have to fight for it.
This is SITREP, the New York City Department of Veterans Services podcast, where we aim to inform and inspire by bringing you the stories of New York City veterans, military service members, their families, and civilian supporters. I'm your host, Gabe Ramos, U.S. Marine Corps veteran and Deputy Press Secretary here at DVS. On today's episode, we chat with Kristen Rouse, President and Founding Director of the New York City Veterans Alliance. Kristen tells us about growing up in Florida, the role that the military and its history has played in her life, and how she found inspiration to affect change for her community after working in city government. Enjoy the show. All right, so we're here with Kristen Rouse. Kristen hardly needs an introduction, but for those who don't know, she's the president and founding director of the New York City Veterans Alliance. She's a veteran of the U.S. Army, U.S. Army Reserve, and the Army National Guard, serving as both a non-commissioned officer and a commissioned officer. Kristen, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so really excited to have you here. A lot to talk about. So I think we could probably just kind of start at the beginning. I know you grew up in Florida. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stories about Florida and folks who grow up there.
Well, Florida's a great state.
Right.
It's a large state. It's a wonderful place to be from. And I enjoy going back to visit family and friends every so often. And I grew up northeast of Orlando. I also later lived in New Orleans, and I spent some time in Tallahassee, Florida, in Florida's capital city. I have family in Miami, in the Tampa area. It's a beautiful state. My favorite part and what I miss most is all the beautiful natural areas, the rivers, the springs.
You don't like the Hudson and the East River?
They're different.
It's so different
and beautiful and stunning in their own way. But like Florida's wetlands, Florida's watersheds, Florida's wildlife. It's crazy, but
wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, exactly. it was a great place to grow up, and I love it as all of us really truly love the places where we're from.
Absolutely. So, tell me a little bit about kind of how you first decided you wanted to join the military. What was your thought process in pursuing that as a potential career?
Well, so I when I was living in Tallahassee, Florida, I had gone to college right out of high school, and that's great for a lot of folks, but sometimes you're just not ready. Mm-hmm. And I was one of those folks who just wasn't ready. And so I had some hiccups when I first started in school, and I thought, I really need to get grounded. Mm-hmm. And I really want to be part of something, that's bigger than me.
Yeah.
And as a, as a patriotic young American at age 20, I said, maybe the Army is the right place for me to get some grounding. My dad had served in the Army in the 50s, and his family had a proud legacy of service. He had an uncle in World War II, and those stories were always around us. And so I thought, maybe this is a good thing for me. And so I signed up then for the Army Reserve and decided, okay, this is a way that I'm going to get grounded, and this is a way that I'm going to get back in school, and this is a way that that I can also be part of something I can really be proud of and serve my country.
Absolutely.
And so
what year is this? What time frame?
1994.
Okay.
And I was 20. You can do the math.
But I actually can't do the math.
But the thing is that I thought going in the Army would be one thing, and it really turned out to be so much more. Mm. And so I ended up spending 10 years in their same reserve unit in New Orleans, Louisiana. It was the 40th United States Army Hospital. It has since been decommissioned, but I spent 10 proud years there. And the folks at the 40th really, in so many ways, were the family support that just wrapped around and helped me grow up as a young 20-something, and helped me really understand what the Army can be for so many people, And it's really that 10 years of grounding where I learned how to be, you know, a good enlisted soldier, and learned that my part really mattered in the unit. Even as an E2, E3, E4, I became a non-commissioned officer. I as a reservist, I was in charge of my section, of my supply section in the hospital, and I was really proud of that. And you know, and after 10 years there, you know, as events unfolded nationally and globally, I requested to go from my reserve unit to the regular Army, and my command supported me in that. And so I went.
Thinking there being that you wanted to do more or be more active, or was there?
Well, also it was knowing that my time was coming.
Right.
My time was coming to either go to Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yep.
And so I took the option to just go all in, because also, you know, as folks who've served in the Guard and Reserve know, it's really difficult to balance your life between your military duty and your, you know, what you feel like is your full-time life.
Right.
And so around 2003, you know, and I was going to school during all this time too. You know, it was the GI Bill, it was the Montgomery GI Bill at that time that enabled me to to live and still work, but it really helped me to get through my undergraduate studies at Loyola New Orleans, and then it helped to fund part of my graduate studies at Florida State University when I went back for my master's, and so I was in school all that time. But I was completing my master's in 2003, and that was the year that the Iraq invasion was happening, and my reserve unit, a lot of folks ended up going to either Iraq or Afghanistan, and I knew my number was going to come up.
Right.
And our unit was not mobilized as a whole, but I said, you know, I think, you know, I know I'm in, I know I'm committed, to the Army and whatever we're doing.
Right.
And, you know, which is, you know, separate from how I felt as a citizen, but, you know, but as a service member, I knew that I needed to play my part.
Yeah. And I think that's not to cut you off there, but I think that's an important distinction, is that when folks think about, you know, folks who've served and deployed in the last 17 years of combat, is that, you know, there's this tendency to think, well, they all feel the same way. They were all in support of the war in the first place. And there's something specific about being a service member kind of during that time. And it's, you're not really thinking about the grand geopolitical thing, right? All you're thinking about is serving with my comrades, serving with folks that are part of my unit, part of my cohort, and just wanting to do something.
Absolutely. And it's also, if I don't play my part, who's going to in my place? Who will go instead of me?
Right.
And I you know, I've never been one to step back and say, you know what, see you later. So service is, you know, it's part of what I learned, you know, in my family. And it's also, the more you serve, the more ingrained and committed you become.
Absolutely.
To service. And so I definitely knew that I was all in. And so I thought that the active component was a better fit for me at that time. And I'm glad that I did that.
Yeah.
So in 2003, I completed my master's degree. And I really appreciate the support of of the faculty and folks at Florida State University who helped me get everything done in time, because they knew that I knew about my military responsibilities during a time when a lot of public attention was on it.
Right.
And so I ended up reporting for active duty in 2004.
Got it.
And then I was assigned to 10th Mountain Division. That's where I ended up at Fort Drum.
And so there was quite a few deployments, right?
So I deployed once as an active soldier.
Right.
I had my first deployment was 12 months to Afghanistan. When I left active duty, I moved to the city and I joined the New York National Guard. And I went through the National Guard's commissioning program, officer candidate school, and became a logistics officer through the Army National Guard, and then I ended up deploying two more times as a soldier in the National Guard.
Got it. So when you say you kind of moved to the city at that point, what was there something specific that you were pursuing here in New York City, or what brought you to New York City?
Well, I mean, when I lived in Florida, when I lived, in New Orleans, I imagined that I would always live. I remember telling people I would always live somewhere where there's alligators. I think, but maybe it's still true. I think there's some in the zoos here.
Yeah. Probably the sewers too.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while they turn up in an apartment or a housing complex.
Yeah.
So I had imagined that I would never leave, the Gulf Coast really. And, current events, the events of history, the calling of service is what got me out of the South.
Mm.
And sent me as far north on the East Coast as you can go in the Army.
Right.
And I had not seen snow in its natural habitat before winter at Fort Drum, which anyone who's experienced a North Country winter or lake effect snow off of Lake Ontario really has had a lot of laughs at my expense. My first winter at Fort Drum, I looked at when I first saw snow, I had to ask somebody, I was like, is that what I'm experiencing right now?
Right.
And I laughed at, you
is
know,
this
but,
what I think it is?
Yeah, yeah. And then I learned a lot more about snow and sub-zero temperatures and everything else.
Right,
but so when I was at Fort Drum, we got 4-day passes, which was a wonderful thing. We got 4-day passes fairly frequently and I came to the city. And I fell in love with the city.
Mm.
And I said, you know what,
this is to fall in love with.
Yeah, I mean, just, I mean, so many things about it. And, the history here, the inspiration, the aspiration, like so much just said, this is where I got to be.
Yeah.
And so
you made that move.
Yeah.
You said, all right, I'm moving to the Big Apple.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about kind of what was that like? So when you first kind of come here, was it like fish out of water? Did you feel at home? Was there an adjustment period?
Well, I had deployed, done that 12-month deployment to Afghanistan. I got back in February of 2007. My ETS, my release from active duty was in May of that year.
Mm-hmm.
So I had time from the time I came, back to Fort Drum in February until May to really figure out what's my next step.
Mm.
And so, I made some visits to the city. I went through Fort Drum's program for transitioning soldiers where you helps you with your resume, helps you with, exposes you to maybe different job fields that you might not have thought of. And all that was really helpful. And I was thinking forward to what would I be doing exactly in New York City? And so I got very interested in working for the city.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in Florida, I worked for the Florida Department of Education. I was very interested in government service as in a civilian role.
What year is this now? Or approximately
this was in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to land in Brooklyn, and so I had a lot of options. I went through the National Guard's Officer Candidate School. I got rooted with my first National Guard unit, which was the Harlem Hellfighters, which is an amazing unit to come to New York with.
Yeah,
I mean, like that's one of like that is I will say it for the record, that is my favorite historical unit.
Uh-huh.
69th guys, I understand, but Harlem Hellfighters, 369th, that's where it's at.
What about them? Why do you say that?
It's just, I mean, it's really a beautiful history of belonging and of proving you belong. And I think that that's so much the story of service is to say, you know what, this country is where this is my home that I love, and I want to be every part of it that I can be,
right.
And be part of its defense.
Absolutely.
And even if mainstream culture or a lot of other people or critics or whatever say you don't belong, there's still a place for you in the military, even if you have to fight for it. And the story of the Harlem Hellfighters as the first African American National Guard unit. Which ended up being the longest serving American unit in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to we could do an entire podcast on that.
Yeah,
you know, definitely. But to learn the history and to really and just learn the story and sacrifice, and also to see the artifacts of artifacts of Henry Johnson, who was later awarded, you know, posthumously the Medal of Honor for his heroism in on the front lines.
So you feel like you're a part of that history, almost like you could touch it a little bit, right?
And the Harlem Hellfighters today really represent New York and our immigrant culture, New Yorkers who were born here, New Yorkers who came here from other places, New Yorkers like me who came from other parts of the country and said, this is home. And so, so the 369th really is such a beautiful coming together of so much of New York. And in so many ways, that's also the story of America.
Absolutely.
And it's the story of the American military. It's a story of who veterans are, especially in New York City. And so it was just really meaningful to me to feel like I had a place in the Harlem Hellfighters when I first moved here in 2007. It was a kind of welcoming that I think I couldn't have gotten anywhere else.
I'm sure. Yeah, definitely. So I'm curious, what was kind of your first exposure to advocacy and getting involved in trying to affect change locally? Because at this point, you were still a reserve, or you were working for the city.
Mm-hmm.
But at what point were you like, this is something that I want to get more involved in and started searching for ways to kind of act on that?
Well, I ended up working nearly 6 years in city service.
Right.
And I had those two additional Afghanistan deployments, sandwiched in there.
Right.
But in my role working for the city, I got to work with a lot of different city agencies. I was part of implementing legislation from the city council. I was part of communicating with state and federal agencies. I touched so many different layers of what it means to see and understand local government. And I'm really grateful for having that opportunity and really getting that lens on how New York City government works and serves New Yorkers.
Yeah.
It was really just a wonderful education, and I worked with so many incredible colleagues, and I worked in emergency management, and so New York City Emergency Management. I mean, it's a great agency, and it's a small one, and it's one of those agencies that a lot of people don't even know exists.
Right.
And
they actually have a podcast.
Everyone has a podcast now. of course they do. I mean, because
I just found this out today.
I mean, because also like outreach is such an important part
of what
they do, and letting New Yorkers know, hey, we're here for you, and here's how you can here's how you can be part of the solution. Here's how you can prepare.
Quick plug for OEM's podcast. It's,
yeah.
I believe, Prep Talk. So check it out.
Yeah, I will check it out. Everyone else check it out.
There you go.
But it's it was a wonderful agency to work for. I got to help to create plans that have been in use in the city and to get to work with other agencies on that and so it really gets you hooked on what's possible.
Right.
And it's not that government is the solution to all problems. It's government in partnership with communities.
Absolutely.
And so seeing how important public-private partnerships were, how important it was to work with the nonprofit community, with community organizations, how really like all of it comes together.
Mm.
At the local level, at the neighborhood level, at the block level, to really make a difference. And with emergency management at a time when citizens are most in need. And so just to see what's possible with that. And
so that kind of gave you that was the catalyst, would you say, that kind of sparked that fire in you? Or
I had done some organizing when I was a grad student, got a taste of working in my graduate student union, at Florida State, English department. Catalyst of change.
There
but
you,
you know no but it's it you know sort of that experience having
so
a vision
kind of dis, you yeah. already had that disposition of your I'm not pre-programmed but you already kind of had the personality you were prone to maybe trying to look for ways to affect change in some form or fashion.
Absolutely. Like so the you know my what I did as a grad student, my experience in the military is very much about what can we do. You know, so you identify a problem, and what can you do to fix it?
Yep.
And what you can the problems you can work on from a government from a government perspective is like those solutions are absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. But you also need to, that also the implementation of it can only happen in partnership with communities. And so, so to get to come on the other side of it, to where, you know, to create a community organization that can work in partnership with government to work on policy, to make things better and to get other members of the community involved.
Right. Which is key.
Yeah. Because the more folks feel that they are stakeholders and that what they do really matters, whether it's just going out to vote or registering voters or sitting in front of a city council member to say, here's how this legislation can affect me. Or rallying somewhere or just being visible or telling your story or writing an op-ed or otherwise just having a voice.
Well, I think it's, you're making it approachable, right? So you're showing that there's different levels at which folks can engage. So if somebody says, oh, advocacy is, you know, picketing out in the street with a sign and always going to rallies. No, there's all these different forms of trying to affect change locally. So it's as easy as just making sure every time there's an election, educating on yourself on the policies, the initiatives, the candidates, and registering to vote. I mean, that's step one, right? And then there's all these other different levels of it. So kind of flashing forward to the New York City Veterans Alliance. Talk about what is the alliance? What is the group? How did that come about?
So the New York City Veterans Alliance, we are a member-driven, grassroots, policy advocacy and community building organization. We advance veterans and their families as civic leaders. So what most of the public will see is that we have a robust online platform for communicating what is happening for veterans and families in the New York metro area. That's at ourveterans.nyc. Because the first step toward empowering a community is informing it. Mm-hmm. And we want to have a steady presence online so that anybody looking for help for some way to get involved as a veteran or family member or somebody who just cares about veterans, there are dozens of events on the calendar at any given time. And even if you don't have time to show up for the writing workshop or the community event or the backyard barbecue or the meditation session or the the athletic activities or whichever, you know that it's out there for you.
Right.
And that these are ways for anybody to connect and to find something that suits you. Mm-hmm. Because one size fits all doesn't work.
Right.
A lot of times, folks, it's hard to get from, way Eastern Queens into Manhattan or to the Bronx or to Staten Island or whichever. So we're trying to help, our community understand what is there locally for them. And so, so ourveterans.nyc is something that we've invested a lot of time, a lot of resources into building and maintaining, that 24/7, access,
right,
to that information. We've also been holding membership meetings effectively and different community events since the fall of 2015. Mm-hmm. And so we've solicited a lot of feedback from our community. We've built a membership base that we are able to survey and talk with and have monthly meetings with to say what are you seeing, what change are you interested in? What priorities are you interested in?
Yeah.
And so our legislative agenda represents that. And we invite our membership to come and talk with legislators about those priorities and talk about why those priorities matters to them or the initiatives that we've worked on. And so so it's really about getting our membership directly involved in doing that advocacy and being heard, having a voice, and moving them forward in ways that they can really make a difference, whether it's serving on their community board, getting involved in their political party's county committee. Mm-hmm. We are nonpartisan, but we talk about opportunities to get involved in whatever moves you.
Mm-hmm.
We've had our members get out and register folks to vote. A couple years in a row now, we've had primary night watch parties, to get everybody amped up about, you know, what's happening on primary night, because so many decisions actually get made on primary day.
Right.
Even though voter turnout in New York City broadly is very low. Our membership lets us know that, you know, they are very engaged as voters, and they are much more likely to turn out on primary day than the average New Yorker.
Which is a selling point too, because if you have specific policy initiatives and things about which you feel really strongly, all the more reason to go out and vote and to organize other folks, like-minded folks, to go out and think and or to vote and to try to see those things enacted.
Yeah, and enthusiasm is contagious.
Yeah, for sure.
We want to keep spreading the word and bringing more members in and being more organized to really get out and share the enthusiasm and let people, especially veterans and their families, know that what they do really matters.
Definitely.
That just one vote, one day of campaign work for whoever moves you or whichever, all of that stuff really goes a long way.
So, when you talk about, you know, those conversations with legislators and folks with the power and influence locally, you, the Alliance, and a lot of the different community organizations, advocacy organizations locally, were a large part in why this agency, this department was created.
Yeah.
So if you could just talk a little bit about, what was that process like? What did that look like?
This has been a really special last few years, and to be part of the advocacy drive that helped to establish an independent Department of Veteran Services, and to as a nonprofit grow up alongside you, mm-hmm. has really been an amazing experience. And we're in our fourth year now, and we're in scaling. We're in scaling mode. We made it through what I hope is the really toughest times because I came to this as a veteran, as an advocate, and as somebody who wanted to do good, but my gosh, I feel like I've learned an MBA's worth of, business experience.
Sure.
And like, wow, what do we have to file with the IRS? What's my budget look like?
Right.
What's my accountant saying?
Yeah.
The best practices of a good nonprofit, of a good business, and all of the work that it takes to make sure that we are transparent and compliant and doing what the best of the nonprofits are doing, to be growing into that in 2019 is really exciting. And so to be growing up alongside of DVS, like, you all have been through so much growth, mm-hmm. and so much, reach and impact. I mean, just alone to be in this, we're sitting in the DVS office here. And I know that it was, there were days when the office was not this nice,
right. Yeah.
and it's really a great thing. But so in 2015, when we got our start, we collaborated with a bunch of service providers, experts, folks who'd been in advocacy for quite a while here in New York City. And we compiled the first substantive policy paper on what could be possible, locally for veterans and families policy wise. And so we took a very measured approach. That report was, I think, like around 80 pages. It was very long,
yeah.
But it represented so much work and so much contribution from so many people, and so much of it has come to pass, which is very, just an incredible thing. As that partnership with the advocacy community, with the detailed paper that we put out, showing what's possible, making the persuasive case for why it really mattered to have an independent agency separate from the mayor's office, what that could do, the vision that it could reach toward, to be part of that, and in tandem with Councilman Eric Ulrich, and his drive, and what he was able to do on the legislative side, to move that forward, and for the mayor to to then understand what that vision was and to support it. And so for all of that to come together at the end of 2015 was really a beautiful moment.
I'm sure, yeah. So we're just about running out of time here. Last thing or last few questions I want to ask. So as you kind of think about your work personally and as the for the Alliance, what do you see kind of moving forward? What are your hopes for the Alliance, for how it kind of interacts with this agency and helping to realize that initial vision?
The end state that's in our mission statement is to achieve a sustainable state of community wellness. Mm-hmm. We will work ourselves out of a job when veterans and their families feel empowered, appreciated, recognized, and are free of any form of discrimination against their military or veteran status. And when we are all connected and we understand what's happening as part of the fabric of the city.
Absolutely.
And I think we have a long ways until that day has come. That day will come. And how we will continue doing that is to keep bringing veterans and family members in our orbit and getting them involved, and realizing that they truly can make a difference. And also offering a number of different community events. Some of the events we do are community outreach. Some of them are in the realm of civic leadership, where veterans are leading the conversation on important issues. And rising up as the civic leaders that we want to see.
Absolutely, got to kind of keep bending that arc.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, veterans get trained as leaders. Our tax dollars invest a lot in teaching veterans how to lead, and we want them to continue to lead here in New York City, no matter how young they are or how old they are.
So, with that said, if you had the opportunity or to take this opportunity. To kind of say something or one thing you'd like every New York City veteran service member to know, what would that be?
That no matter when you served, no matter where you served, no matter what your situation of service was, if you served during a time when policies had not yet caught up to realities, the realities of equal citizenship.
Yep.
There are folks still serving who are not yet recognized as equal Americans. But if you were discharged under unjust policies or because of a condition or an event that happened in the course of your service that was not recognized or understood, like your service matters and you're a veteran and you belong to this community and you have a place in this community if you choose it. And if you are a family member, you belong. If you are a son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, you are part of this community too, and military service matters. Service to country matters. Service to community matters. Not all service is military service, but you have a place, and your service matters.
Absolutely. And what about to the folks who maybe don't necessarily have a direct connection to the military or to a veterans or service members? What would you tell them?
What we want to communicate to New Yorkers is that veterans and military members and their families are just as vital to the fabric and the success and the inspiration of New York City as anybody else. Mm. Because veterans and military members are everything that New Yorkers are and that New Yorkers are proud of. But in particular, our military history, whether you go back to 1776 with the Battle of Brooklyn, which was the largest by far battle of the American Revolution, whether you go back to George Washington, Nathaniel Greene, Alexander Hamilton, Margaret Corbin, any of those folks from 1776 to the Irish Brigade in the Civil War, to the Harlem Hellfighters, to those who served here in New York City during World War II, the women and men who served here in New York City during World War II, and the New Yorkers who went to Korea, to Vietnam, to everywhere in between.
Yep.
And also, like the younger veterans who signed up because of the attack in 2001 that happened right here, our military history has been absolutely integral to New York, to the greatness of New York, to the veterans are many of the people who have made New York City the great metropolis of the world that it is. And for New Yorkers to really recognize and understand it and connect with it is so important.
Absolutely. Well, Kristen, thanks so much for being here. It's been a real treat. If folks want to get a hold of you, social media, website, the Alliance, how should they reach
out? NYCVeteransAlliance.org. Also, check out our community resources at ourveterans.nyc. Click on anything that emails, and you can get to one of my great staff members, and they know where I work, so it'll get to me.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for being here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Gabe. Really appreciate it.
Cheers.